folks, on Tuesday, we've been spending time for, you know, a number of months, maybe even several years now, on participants of the NOLA Coalition, part of the GNO Inc. endeavor in trying to make a difference in our communities across the city of New Orleans and throughout the metropolitan area. Today's a little bit different. We are going to visit with Daphne Barnes, the Executive Director of Workforce for GNO Inc., about their internship program, their innovation internship program, that enters its sixth year. And it's quite an accomplishment. They have quite the story to tell. And with that, Daphne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. How are you this morning?
I am doing great. I always enjoy talking about these internship programs. Y'all have a number of not-for-profits within the NOLA Coalition that run internship programs, too. So a lot of complementary activities going on for our young adults here, which I think has been huge and has been really a difference maker.
Well, you know, economic development and workforce development, it all goes hand in hand, and it builds our entire region. That's why we have this internship program. And as you stated, we're looking at this at a variety of levels. We have within the NOLA Coalition a number of youth serving organizations that focus on our high school students. And then we have our internship program that focuses on our two-year and four-year students in our colleges and universities here, both in the state of Louisiana and our students who live in Louisiana but may go to school outside of the state. It's part of our attraction and retention strategy for both our businesses and for our people here.
So this year, you guys placed 45 college students with 39 companies across Southeast Louisiana. You guys also gave me the opportunity to address the cohort, and I really enjoyed that. And I'm assuming no one left the program after hearing my comments. But
let me tell you, the parents loved it, and they were like, you know what, this is perfect. I love what Newell had to say, and they're like, we get to see a different side of Newell, and you know, just sharing that knowledge with the students. The interns. We're still talking about it. I love it.
Well, I truly enjoyed it. And what I really enjoyed was the legacy, of young adults that were involved in the program that are coming back in a different role. Talk to us about that.
So what we see is that we have our interns in our region. One of the biggest challenges facing us is retaining that talented young people after they graduate. We've talked about, from an economic standpoint, the cost of the brain drain. That's what we try to address right here with this internship program. I'm looking back now at from our second year, you were in the room. We had a gentleman who was in the room who had been with us, interned with one of our companies, and is now employed with that company where he interned and training our next interns for the sixth cohort. So it's a full circle moment. And we do that to give students the opportunity to build meaningful careers right here before they leave to seek opportunities elsewhere. They get that direct exposure, and the employers are gaining access to that talent. And we're seeing the fruits of our labor.
If you would describe for the listening audience the process that these young adults have to go through to even get into the program, it's very competitive.
It's incredibly competitive. And you know what's interesting, Newell? I say this all the time. We don't turn anyone away. We don't say, hey, you don't have a 3.975 GPA. What we do look at is what employers are looking at. We're looking at your professionalism. We're looking at your commitment. We're looking at your preparation. Those are the things that differentiate those who are ready to come into the workforce with those who aren't. And it also becomes a learning opportunity on what to expect when you're transitioning into a professional work environment. So when interns apply, our applications open every September and last through December. The first thing they have to do is get their application in on time. If you don't have your application in on time, that is the first stop point. After that, they're required to show up to a Zoom meeting. We schedule it, and it's during the holiday break. So if you're in college and you feel that, you know, I can't make it happen, we understand. You can't move forward. Try again next year. When you get on that meeting, are you dressed professionally? Is your camera on? Are you able to communicate? Are you answering the questions? Are you paying attention? All these things occur. They have to have all their paperwork in. They go through another set of processes where they then have to go through training with interview prep, resume preparation, all that has to be scheduled by them. And they have to do things as simple as read their emails and pay attention to calendar invites. And you'll be surprised how our over 200 applicants, only 90 of them made it to the actual interview process.
Wow.
So we have 39 companies, and these 90 students had to compete with others who were also competing for same spots within that process, and only half of them made it. Because if you are a company who's looking for a civil engineer, every single civil engineer that makes it through our screening process, you get to interview them. Within 2 days, we conducted about over 500 interviews right here in our offices. It's kind of like speed dating,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They get. You have to make the best impression. You have to stand out. You have to know that company. And it is a competitive process. And they know this from the beginning. And so our companies get to choose who they see, and they know they're getting the cream of the crop. And we've already vetted their professionalism.
Yeah, you know, and what's interesting is you could just the sense I got being in the room with the cohorts is that you got that vibe, right? that they were ready to hit the road running.
Yes.
You know, they were ready.
And, you know, our training partners said the same thing you said, and it happens every year. It's like they get better and better. It's like, you know, the longer you cook your roux, the better your gumbo tastes. That's kind of what it is. In a 6 year, every year, our companies, our training partners are like, this group is special. That's what they said about this group. They are special. They are ready. When they go through, we do professionalism training where they go again. They have a week-long training with professionals. They're like, this group is different. They finished their pitch competition the week before last. The trainers there said, this group is special. They are ready, and they're hungry, and they're incredibly bright young people. It is wonderful being in a room with them and feeding off that energy that you witness yourself.
Yeah. And you guys, I was the beneficiary. Y'all have allowed me to interview some of the companies involved, you know, and the people that were involved in interviewing the cohorts. And I saw a number of them at that function that day, which I thought was great that they actually show up for that as well. And it was really touching. And I got a chance to talk to them, and they thanked me for the interview and how much they enjoyed it. A lot of them were very nervous about it. You and I have talked about that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But you know, what's interesting is that they always talk about what they learn from the young adults, too.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, and I think that is absolutely the case. What we learn, because it's a two-way street. While we may have industry that are also saying, hey, this is what we need, we have the talent saying, this is what we need. And I think that's the special sauce, kind of that communication piece and how our interns show up. They show up ready to contribute, and I think that's what makes an impact. I think that's why last summer, for example, 51% of our interns were asked to have an extension with their company. You know, we have a number of interns who have graduated. The ones who have not gone on to higher education, meaning a master's degree or some sort of postdoc or professional school, where they're being hired because they've made that impression and shown they could work. They are coming with ideas, and they learn how to be contributing members to the corporation or organization in which they're working.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like a structured audition that you get for a number of weeks.
Yeah.
And when you think about, you know, being fortunate enough to make it through that process and get that audition like that, you're getting opportunities that most other people will never, ever have.
And that's one of the things that our companies tell us. They were like, they didn't have this. you know, when they were younger, just having that opportunity. And I will always say that paid opportunity.
Yeah.
Our companies are able to actually look at someone, like we have a number of graduating seniors. They're actually able to look and take almost a risk-free assessment of someone, not just from the perspective of they went through interview rounds and I think they'll be a good fit, and then that person decides they're not showing up Monday morning when they're supposed to be hired, no call, no show. They get to take that same graduating senior and have 8 weeks with them, learning them and seeing, is this a person that's a good fit for my company? And growing them to work within your company culture.
Yeah.
And able to make that decision, it's almost like a no-brainer. And that's why we have a 98% company retention rate. That's why companies are looking and hiring our students. That's why I think you may remember me mentioning this. We have interns who are going back to their same companies mm-hmm. because they're being groomed from freshman all the way to senior.
Yeah.
To have a job upon graduation, that's what we want to see, and that's what we're working at.
Well, you know, there's a huge delta between I think they're a good fit for our culture mm-hmm. and I know they're a good fit for our culture, right?
Yes. And what that does is it also allows the intern to know, hey, this is where I want to work or where I want to be. Because there's some interns who say, you know, I thought I wanted to do this type of engineering or this type of job. Now that I've done it, maybe it's not for me, and I want to try a different type of company. That allows them to also grow and make sure that there is a good fit on both sides. That's why our matching process is so important. Like our companies rank their top candidates, and also our candidates rank their top companies, and we only match them by the top three. So you will never get someone not matched for a good fit. So people are able to know this, whether it's the company or the intern, and the interns are able to get that work experience even if they are not selected for that job. Because as you know, companies are now looking for you to have that experiential experience before they even hire you. So if I'm an engineering intern, if I am a STEM major and I'm doing research, I can say over the past 3 or 4 summers, these are the things that I have done. These are actual things outside of the classroom. These are things in industry where I have true experience working in these areas, and this is how I can benefit your company.
When we I know for some folks it may not sound like a lot of placements, but 45 is a big program when you're talking about experiential learning. If there are companies out there that are listening today and they have an interest of maybe participating in the future, where would they go? Because I know this is how y'all have grown this program, but it's so important, you know, to give these young adults a taste of what we actually have here, right at home, the place that we call home, right?
Yes. So if a company was interested, well, the first thing we always say is they have to fit into the particular sectors in which we work. We do focus on those high-wage, high-growth sectors where we see that industry demand right here in the New Orleans region and where our companies are telling us they need the work. So it's geoengineering focus areas. So, of course, it's generalized STEM. So that's science, technology, engineering, mathematics. That is the general, you know, kind of bucket. But within that, we also have future energy or our all-of-the-above energy strategy. So that's both renewable and non-renewable energy processes. So if your companies that fit into those buckets, there we go. We also look at startups. We work with a number of our startups in innovation, engineering, private equity and venture capital, and maritime trade and logistics, which is the track that we launched this summer in response to industry demand.
Yeah. So, and I just throw this out to folks that are involved with companies. Take advantage of this opportunity. You learn a lot about these kids. I've talked to, as I said, y'all have made companies available to me, and I've been amazed by how excited they are about this program and the returns that they've had. And what's really amazing is that there have been suggestions and opportunities for the cohorts to kind of look at these companies critically, you know, in certain little nuanced ways and in certain mm-hmm. silos. And they've actually implemented their observations, which, you know, I love. And I mean, when you have that early onset success as a young professional like that, I mean, it's just so meaningful, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I always say, we're building something bigger than an internship program, mm-hmm. Newell. We're building a talent ecosystem for New Orleans and our entire region, really. So when our students who, whether they are in school here or if they decided to go to school out of state, we need them to be able to discover the opportunity here and bring them back. Talent attraction and retention is critical. And when companies can find the talent here, they grow here. And that's how you create long-term economic prosperity for our entire region.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, you know,
And success breeds success, right? I mean, it just goes hand in glove with it. And then, you know, it's interesting, too. You correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the sense that a lot of the companies that had never really communicated with one another as a result of this program, they've made connections and they have established relationships, both businesses and otherwise, as a result of this program, right?
100%. We have laboratories working with other laboratories talking about how they could collaborate on different testing and different products. We have different engineering organizations. What's really funny is how at the closing ceremony, when we talk about the certifications the students have gotten, like industry-based certifications, how the competition starts and they're like, oh, y'all did this, so we're going to make sure our intern does this.
Right.
And the competition that comes within the companies as they're looking at the talent and then seeing, you know, how they can all work together and how, you know, a rising tide lifts the entire ships, right?
Yep.
And so that's what we're seeing, where our companies are communicating more and saying, this is what we need to communicate and say where we need our talent pools developed. And they come through us. And that's our job at GNO Inc.
Yeah. I was really impressed. And Daphne, thank you so much for the invite and the opportunity to address the cohorts. I mean, I've talked about it a lot, but it was good to see it in action, right? And to see the excitement amongst the young adults and the excitement of the sponsoring corporations. And then, as I told them, you know, when you look at the corporations involved and then you also look at the umbrella corporations that are helping finance and fund this operation, mm-hmm. they got some of the greatest cheerleaders in America pulling for them. I said, you don't know how fortunate you are. Because, you know, I don't ever remember having a group of cheerleaders like that in my corner, I can promise you.
Completely committed to their success. That's why they continue to invest. So we're talking about Louisiana Works. So we're talking about, at the state level. We're talking about Chevron, Boeing. You know, a number of major companies are committed to these young people's success.
Yeah, well, I think one was the Walton Family Foundation.
The Walton Family Foundation, the Brown Foundation. I mean, these people are saying, this is important. We have to be committed to our region, and we have to grow it. And they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're investing in our talent.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Continued success, and I know it'll happen with this program. 6 years of the Innovation Internship Program. Folks, you can go to the GNO Inc. website if you want to participate or you want some more information. Just ask for Daphne Barnes. That's what everybody does when they call GNO Inc., but it's okay. Executive Director of Workforce for GNO Inc. You definitely want to talk to Daphne, not Michael. We all know that.
I'm not co-signing on that one. You know. You're going to get me in trouble.
No comment. You can say no comment. We'll be right back, folks. Thank you, Daphne.
Thank you, Noel.
We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're going to talk about this 4-3 decision by the Louisiana Supreme Court upholding a state law, Act 15, that abolished separate Orleans Parish criminal clerk of court office and putting it under the civil clerk. But I wanted to really quickly go through a timeline so everybody kind of understands what it happened here. So elections were held November 15th of 2025. Chelsea Richard Napoleon was the civil clerk elected. Calvin Duncan was the criminal court clerk elected to take office on May the 4th. On April 30th of 2026, the governor signs Act 15. On May the 8th, the district court issues an injunction prohibiting further action on the consolidation of these offices. On May the 11th, the council declares a vacancy and claims that a new clerk of court office had been created and appoints Judge Calvin Johnson as the interim clerk of court. On May 13th, letters are sent by the Attorney General to the mayor and the council saying that the presumption is that the law is constitutional until ruled unconstitutional. There's already been a stay issued. It's going to be heard ultimately by the Supreme Court. And in fact, on May the 14th, the Louisiana Supreme Court exercises or declares its jurisdiction over both suits that had been filed. And then we get to where we are now, where a decision has been rendered. And Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, joins us. Dane, thank you for hanging with me here. The timeline, I think, is important because a lot of people are really confused about who's doing what, when, why, and how.
Yeah, and a remarkably fast timeline. Cases just don't move through the court system as quickly as this one did. And the Louisiana Supreme Court did something that was highly unusual over at least one or two dissents a couple of weeks ago by exercising its supervisory plenary jurisdiction and scooping this case up from the lower courts and making a decision in a matter of weeks rather than months or years, as is usually the case.
And even more odd was the way that it was handled while at the Supreme Court, right? If my memory serves me correct, there was not an open hearing, was there?
No, the court ordered that the hearing take place in the district court in East Baton Rouge Parish, which happened, but they ordered the district court not to make any rulings, just to create a record. The record went up to the Louisiana Supreme Court, bypassing the First Circuit Court of Appeals, another unusual procedure in this case, and then the Supreme Court considered the record developed in the district court and without oral argument issued a one vote margin 4-3 case finding that Act 15 was constitutional and effective, essentially finding that the legislature and Governor Landry validly abolished the clerk of criminal district court and transferred that office's duties to Chelsea Napoleon, the civil clerk.
I guess there was some justification, in my view, for exercising the authority and taking control over both lawsuits, because at one point in time we had the clerk of civil district court, who is now the clerk of court for Orleans, and Judge Calvin Johnson, the interim appointee, show up at a warehouse where voting machines, because, you know, kind of the backdrop to this is that we had voting, an election going on as well, that they're responsible for. And that's what you want to avoid, right, is having two individuals that have been named by two separate means.
Right, and of course, Calvin Duncan had been elected, so he too was claiming to be clerk.
So
we had three people claiming to be clerk of court for Orleans Parish. It's almost one of those unusual Bush versus Gore situations, as we saw with the U.S. Supreme Court, is that this court, in both cases, the high courts decided, well, we need to step in and resolve the confusion.
And then in the interim, we had the AG writing a letter to both the mayor and the council looking at Title 42 relative to the usurper statutes of kind of standing in the way, possibly, of an act that had been passed that's presumed constitutional until the court rules otherwise, of Act 15, that added even more kind of backroom drama to all of this.
that and the city council acting, declaring a vacancy and calling an election. So, and again, making derogatory remarks about the attorney general making derogatory remarks about the city. Well, yeah, I think everybody just kind of lost their heads a little bit on this. And you know, yet another reason why the Louisiana Supreme Court needed to step in and definitively resolve the issues, which it did yesterday.
So if you would, for the benefit of listening audience, talk about this decision, a 4-3 decision, as you pointed out, and what some of the competing ideologies were amongst the majority and the dissenters.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate opinion was that Act 15, which was the act that Governor Landry signed into law only a matter of weeks ago, which created a single clerk of court for Orleans Parish and then assigned all of those duties to Chelsea Napoleon, the civil court. The Louisiana Supreme Court, again, in a 4-3 decision yesterday, held that that was constitutional under the Louisiana Constitution and effective, which means the legislature and the governor validly abolished the clerk of criminal court, validly transferred that office's duties to the civil district clerk of court, Chelsea Napoleon, and therefore there was no vacancy that needed to be filled by appointment or by election. And they held that Calvin Johnson's city council appointment as the interim clerk was invalid and permanently enjoined him from acting in that capacity. So that essentially their reasoning was that under the Louisiana Constitution, there is an unusual court structure set up for Orleans, unlike the court structure in most other judicial districts and parishes throughout the state, in which we have separate civil and criminal courts and had separate civil and criminal clerks. But the Constitution allowed or essentially made those offices, quote, subject to change by law, which was the state Constitution's authorization to the legislature to giving it essentially plenary authority to change, rename, merge, or abolish those judicial offices as the legislature saw fit. And they did that, and that was lawful according to the majority.
You've practiced law for a long time. That's kind of a strange happenstance, right, where they went to language of a constitutional convention where it was clear what the intent was and what they were trying to avoid, a vote of a supermajority within the houses or a public referendum.
Yeah, I mean, it was unusual. This is one of these cases that I kind of thought could have gone either way. And it wasn't, I thought, a clear, hands-down winner for Mr. Johnson. Obviously not. It wasn't for him or for Chelsea Napoleon, ultimately. It was a close call. And the close call in the law is reflected by the close vote among the justices. So three justices, including the Chief Justice, wound up in the as dissenters, essentially saying that the people of Orleans Parish were denied their right to vote for the clerk of court. And you know, the majority essentially said no, they voted for Chelsea Napoleon, and as a result they did have a Democratic voice in who's going to serve as the Orleans clerk of court.
What was really weird for me, and I don't know how much this played into, of course, none of us really know, because there was not an open hearing, you know, by the Supreme Court. And I would have loved to have heard how they were going to deal with the action taken by the city council, because what they actually did was going to end up removing two people from office, which was right. A strange happenstance as well.
Yeah, it was. It was. But again, all that is now one day later, all that's behind us. This is one of these situations where there is no appeal or ability to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, because all of this ruling was based entirely on state statutory and constitutional law. The court did mention that there's no federal constitutional right of voters to not have offices eliminated, to preserve offices. That's very clear as a matter of federal constitutional law. So it's over. We've got finality. Now, of course, Calvin Johnson still has...
Calvin Duncan.
I'm sorry, Calvin Duncan. Yeah, we've got two Calvins here.
Right.
Calvin Duncan still has his federal suit pending in the Middle District up in Baton Rouge. So he is, and he's gotten a favorable ruling already from Judge DeGravelle that was administratively and summarily reversed by the Fifth Circuit. But that case is still pending, and he's going to have a hearing. And he's going to allege that, and he has alleged, and he's going to argue in that ongoing federal litigation that the right of the people, the voters, to vote for their representatives has been infringed as a federal constitutional matter. Now, given the way that he lost in the Louisiana Supreme Court, I think he's got virtually no chance of winning in federal court now. But that case today, as we speak, is still pending.
Yeah, you know, in the closing paragraphs of the decision, the majority said, in reaching this conclusion, we acknowledge that the timing of the legislation was perhaps unfortunate. And I would agree with that. In my monologue earlier, I said, I just think, you know, in the totality of circumstances, the public elected someone. If we were going to change this, I would have much preferred for Calvin Duncan to have served his one term and then, you know, have the legislature do whatever they were going to do and make it effective at the end of the term.
That certainly would have been cleaner, but you could certainly see the other side.
Yeah.
From a public policy and legislative standpoint, it is quite odd that New Orleans has two court systems, two clerk systems. There's really no need for that, particularly since Orleans Parish is only, 40% or 60% the size it was 50 years ago. And this is part of an effort to kind of right size the court system and bring it into line with the court systems across the rest of the state.
Yeah. And and it's kind of interesting, a lot of the sideshow that went on here, the court attempted to address some of that. I think what the court basically was saying is that some of this was premature and therefore it would not have been a valid violation relative to the usurpation statutes under Title 42.
Right. Yeah. And that was all a sideshow to the main issues that were definitively resolved yesterday.
Yeah. It'd be... what do you think happens next? I mean, I got to imagine maybe in the next session there may be some legislation or something that comes forward to try and avert this from happening. That would not surprise me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't follow politics like you do. I wouldn't be surprised by anything that comes out of the legislature, but
I'm not either.
I would be surprised if they were to do something that would accommodate what some lawmakers in New Orleans want. I mean, there seems to be this hostile theme toward Orleans Parish these days in the state legislature, and I would be surprised to see them the legislature go back to a system where we have two courts, two clerks of court. I'm surprised that we still have two court systems as aggressively as some lawmakers have been trying to merge the courts.
Yeah, it's interesting because the parallel path on the reduction of the number of judges in criminal district court, I think they kind of backpedaled on civil district court, if my memory serves me correct, in removing three judges. Your thoughts? There are a lot of folks that are saying that, you know, this is going to completely and totally disrupt the system. I'm one of those that believes, as judges, it's one of the most important roles to play in justice in this country. you got to work hard. I mean, it's not an 8 hour a day job. It may take more than that. And, you know, if you don't want to do that, then don't run for judge.
Right. Yeah. Again, they've got good arguments on both sides, but the notion that the judiciary in New Orleans should be right-sized is one that is a good one. I mean, again, we've got a different situation today. New Orleans is hard to make an argument that New Orleans really needs its own odd court system that's different from the other judicial districts. But again, people like to preserve judicial offices and don't like to see anybody, any elected officials, lose their positions.
Yeah, that would be political offices in general, not just judicial offices.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Once you create it, to take it away is going to be literally almost impossible, but they did it this time. As always, thank you so much for your time and your insight, Dane Ciolino, professor of law at Loyola. We really appreciate it, and have a great week.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Okunor Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, there is a lot to talk about. Things changing in the Middle East by the moment. Things going on here in the city. We come off the heels of a great weekend with the tall ships coming in to the port here. So we're very excited about that. And we've got the mayor coming in studio here shortly, and we'll be talking to her for the next hour on a number of different issues. The legislative session ended yesterday, and so everybody's kind of looking at what they were able to accomplish. We'll talk about some of that, obviously, with the mayor, because it's very important. They had a number of key pieces of legislation that they were working through that process, and it seems as though they were able to succeed on many fronts. And then, you know, on a parallel path to that, there were a number of things that were passed that maybe might, some folks are saying, are going to create some problems for the city. So we'll talk about that as well. Sewage and Water Board, though, has really been the top of mind issue and the re-engineering of that organization. There are so many different things that are going on there that it just really, I don't know, kind of mind-numbing and mystifying to me as to how that all works. But hopefully we'll hear from the mayor as to what the plan is going to be in implementing these changes that were done at the Louisiana legislature, which is going to be interesting to hear. That as well. We really appreciate Dane Ciolino joining us to talk about the Louisiana Supreme Court and upholding Act 15 and what that ultimately means as well. So we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. And just remember that nothing's worse than losing power during summer and hurricane season, and that's why WWL teamed up with Craig's Electrical and Generator to offer you the chance to win a Generac GP6500 portable generator, a nearly $1,000 value. It's happening now. Go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win comfort, security, peace of mind from Craig's Electrical and Generators, because when the power goes off, Craig comes on with WWL. We'll be right back. All right, folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, the mayor is in the house. Mayor Helena Moreno will be with us for the entire hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.